This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. I can personally attest to the great experience there in terms of the inventory available, the ability to work with people, the ability of them to work with you, and to give you the best buying experience possible. That's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And, of course, a great service department that takes care of routine, difficult, whatever it may be. Tuesdays with Neil. That's what we have on the docket this half hour. And, sir, it is always a pleasure. Welcome.
Well, pleasure is all mine, as always. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about Sunday Ticket. So the NFL ordered to pay $4.7 billion in damages to the residential class and $96 million in damages to the commercial class, which means they could end up liable for $14.4 billion. Wow. So let's start with, you know, what was your thought when you saw the result of it?
Honestly, my first thought was more the money that they would end up having to charge each team. I was curious how the union would react to that as far as the salary cap would be concerned, because a literal interpretation of it would be, in that sense, I would think anyway, you can argue that is a payout which would come out of their revenue. It would be really tough for any of those teams to pay out that much in one sitting. While I understand that they're, you know, billion-dollar valuated companies, they're not that liquid. You know, they only collect money for 3 months out of the year, and then a balloon payment for the revenue sharing. And they make plenty of cash. I'm not suggesting that they don't, but that money is usually invested pretty quickly. It's not like they have all of it sitting around. If you're the Dallas Cowboys, for example, you're looking at three players with significant bonuses coming from somebody in their eyes, preferably them, Dak Prescott, Micah Parsons, and CeeDee Lamb. They have to have all of that cash up front. They have to pay out their share of this settlement. To have the money to pay those players. I know it seems crazy that Jerry Jones wouldn't have the money, but $450 million is far more than what they would pay if they signed all three of them, which they're probably not going to do. So the ramifications of it, I think, are a little bit more steep than people think that they are. But that said, it's also the initial amount. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what they're going to land on, and how it is that they'll handle the payment of it, I think, is a different matter. If it's X over, you know, Y amount of years, they'll have to pay out something for sure. I'm curious where it's going to go logistically within the league, within each team, how they're going to kind of dole that out, or if it's just going to be really that they'll knock it down to one rev share payment that teams won't get, and how that will ultimately affect spending, because, you know, there's a difference between that revenue number and then the bottom line of what they're spending, which is going to mean there's an off season where I'm sure Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, who's been all over this from the beginning, will accuse them all of colluding and not paying out in free agency in a year to follow all of this. Wouldn't surprise me if that's kind of where it all goes But it's rare in the sense that they don't lose class action suits. They don't pay out this much money that we are aware of. Anything that they settle, we obviously wouldn't know. But I think it's safe to say they haven't spent that much money on anything. You know, any one particular team or the league has not put out that much cash before. And, you know, I don't want to say I was surprised by the ruling. All of it is so much that I don't know if I'm the best expert to speak on it, but it definitely was like, wow, I can't believe that didn't go in their favor. I can't believe it was seen as that much. The NFL's not done, though. Let's see how, you know, Jeff Pasch reacts to all of it, what it is they're going to pull out to get out of paying that much money. I'm sure that the final amount will be reduced quite a bit.
Your post-trial motions will be heard July 31st, and there's going to be a motion to set aside the verdict. Say it is not set aside, then the NFL is going to appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court. So this is still part of the process here. But it took the jury 5 hours to deliberate. It's a product that has so much, quote, over-the-air product. You know, now cable, of course, but the cable, it feels like over-the-air. I know you're paying your cable bill. But do you think that played a role? I mean, I'm trying to guess here. What, you know, when you got eight people sitting, it was not a 12-person jury, it was eight. Eight people sitting there like, yeah, I don't feel like paying through the nose for this. The NFL's like, you know, you wonder if that enters into it.
I would think to a fundamental level, I think that's what it would have to be. You know, I said in this space a couple weeks ago, the NFL wants to treat it like a premium product, and I can understand why they would want to do that.
Sure.
I didn't think that it would not be allowable for them to do that. At the same time, I think, you know, my car could have been made a lot cheaper than it was. Do I want them to do that is a different question.
Right.
So I think I was kind of surprised. As you said, I think with eight people on the jury, there are eight people that are going to say, well, you make a bunch of money. You didn't need to charge this much. You're liable for it. I did not anticipate that would have been the result. At the same time, though, as a user of NFL ticket, I don't want them to cut corners for the cost for whatever it is. I mean, it was kind of buggy anyway. I felt, and I've said this before too, YouTube TV was a pretty good product. Overall, it was a good experience at a price that I thought was, you know, probably about right for, you know, for the market for what it is. I think anybody can do something cheaper. Ultimately, it's who you're comfortable doing business with that ultimately matters, in my opinion. So, in that, you know, maybe it was off a little bit over a large amount of time. Maybe they could have cut out a little bit more, but in the end, I think it damages the product, and I don't think that the jury would have seen it that way in this particular case. So, obviously, they didn't, but I feel probably the NFL is a little bit more surprised than not that it didn't go in their favor for that reason.
It's
really interesting, you know. There's a lot that goes into this.
Yeah, because normally the NFL is, when it comes to media, is as savvy as an organization as there is out there. And other professional leagues aren't quite, but they're doing better. I mean, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NHL, they have a similar system, except they market their packages on multiple distributors and they share in the revenue per subscriber instead of receiving an outright rights fee. See, that I think that's one of the differences here as well, is the number.
Yeah, I think that that model is also something that was put in place in the NFL a long time ago versus the NBA. MLB is probably the better example of it, on a more extreme end. But I think the NBA kind of noticed that as the third of the big three to kind of, you know, really break into it. They weren't a huge product until the 80s. In that, you can see that there's room to share revenue as well as kind of make your own brand and you know, let the players perhaps have, you know, a bit bigger of a chunk of it all. And the rights broadcast being you know, it at that point, certainly, you know, the height of Bird and Magic in the early 80s, 84, 85, 86, in that time period, the TV deals went through the roof, and that's where money was going as far as entertainment and society was. You know, TV was hugely lucrative, and I think the NBA had that in its DNA to the point where they were first into streaming. They got a lot more into social media. The NFL was late to the game in all those things because they were kind of set in their ways. And I think that casts them in a negative light as well. You know, they could have tried to find different ways to, I don't want to say dilute, but diversify where their product is going, therefore, you know, perhaps charge a little bit less. I think that probably worked against them a little bit as well. If you look at it from a common person's perspective now, why isn't your product across everything? I see NBC on five different things. Why aren't you like that? To your point, I think that does ultimately, you know, it would cast doubt that they really tried to, you know, make a reasonable effort to keep the price down. They would have had more opportunity to do that. But as you and I have discussed many times, maybe this is why they're dialing into Netflix, Amazon Prime. Obviously, they went to YouTube TV already. They are now diversifying. It's just that it's, you know, 2023 when they really started doing all this. The NBA has been doing it for 10 years. You know, the NBA was probably one of the bigger case studies across the entire market as far as streaming goes. They taught people a lot of how to be able to do that. So in comparison to their peers, I think they were the least flexible and least ready to change, and with that, I think ultimately it cost them. But I don't think they expected it to.
And now, talking about cost, the Jaguars are going to renovate their stadium, and same story with Carolina. The cost in Charlotte is $800 million. The cost in Jacksonville is $1.4 billion along the way, but the teams are not the ones picking up the majority of the tab on it. When you look at what cities are doing and states are doing when it comes to stadiums, whether it's building them or renovating them, what is your thought as to what the league and the team's responsibilities should be?
This covers a lot of different things. I've talked to a lot of lawyers and team personnel about this. I find it incredibly fascinating. But when you no longer have the LA chip, you no longer have the Vegas chip,
yeah,
are you looking to expand? Everybody takes London seriously. And the only team that may have possibly considered it seriously was the Jaguars. And to some degree, I think the Jaguars held on to that in an effort to make sure that their stadium was renovated, rebuilt, what, you know, whatever you want to do with it. I don't know if you've ever been out there, but it's on a
Jacksonville
point at the edge of the city, yeah, in Jacksonville.
Yeah, no, I've broadcast a Gator Bowl game. I did a Penn State Georgia game there.
Okay, and the entire stadium is built for the Florida Georgia game.
That's really
the main appeal to it, but it didn't end up staying there. They've moved it around. There's not really a tenant for them that's significant. In fact, obviously, I think in Jacksonville, both the Florida Gators and the Georgia Bulldogs are bigger than the Jaguars are. They would love to get more of those games, but that's obviously not going to work for them. Mm-hmm. They wanted something long-term. They wanted a long-term investment. You weren't sure if it was going to happen in Jacksonville after the expiration of the Florida Georgia game being played at that stadium. I forget what it's called nowadays. EverBank is what I'm stuck on. Even go back to Alltel when it first came out.
Yeah, it's still EverBank. Yep.
EverBank. Okay. You're able to get a good market there, and the stadium, as far as the layout goes, where it is, it's built for college football.
Yeah.
You know, it's smack dab in the middle of 500 acres of tailgate space. You know, literally what it is. You know, it's interesting in that way. I don't think they wanted to leave that because they're not getting that anywhere in London. There's no way that would happen. That's assuming the league would even want to do all of that just for one team being able to relocate. But getting back to my point, what other card do they have to play? Where are they going to go? So now I think that the savvy and perhaps, you know, less enthused about tax dollars going to fund stadiums, from a politician's perspective, they can see that the NFL doesn't really have the stick it used to have. You know, we've talked about this in Minnesota, where I am now. The NFL basically came in and quietly bullied the Minnesota State Legislature to get U.S. Bank Stadium built. And yes, that's not long after baseball kind of did the same thing a couple of years before that for a new Twin Stadium. You saw them move out of St. Louis over a stadium issue. You saw Vegas, you know, all but beg the Raiders to move there. All of those chips are played. Where else are they going to go? I don't know how much a local community needs to worry about a team forcing themselves to leave. You know, now look at what in this different market, I understand, but just 10,000-foot level comparison. Look at what the Oakland A's have to do, and look at what they've had to do to get out of Oakland. I mean, right, it took them forever to do that. Yeah. And that's not an NFL situation at all. You know, I don't think the next generation of voters are really going to go for this so much. So it makes you wonder if there's not ideas in mind of other communities, maybe spending a little bit less. You know, but I think the next wave of owners, the next generation of their tenure as owners, is going to come with them spending more money on stadiums if that's what they want. I don't think they're going to be able to get tax dollars to fund everything. And the reason I bring that up is Heinz Field isn't new anymore. I know people in Pittsburgh are going to say it's new for another 20 years, but no, it's not new anymore. No. They're not, you know, I'm not saying get rid of Heinz Field. It's fine, but I don't think, you know, within our lifetime, it's a subject that's not going to come up. So to some degree, you have to start wondering about areas like that, you know. How many? I'm sure you've been to Lambeau at some point, but that's, you know, it's historic. Yep. It's nice and everything.
Yep.
It's not. It's antiquated for old stadiums. Makes you wonder what's going to happen with that. How much money are they going to have to chip in for that? You know, obviously the issue in Chicago. They're looking to get out of Chicago completely, and I'm pretty sure that's the only way they're going to be able to do it. But the McCaskills are going to have to pay a chunk of that to be able to do it, a lot less than they used to. You're not going to move the Chicago Bears. Even if you did, where are you going to move them to? Fargo, North Dakota? I don't think there is a major city anymore that's interested in putting up that much money to absorb a team in that way if it's now going to be $2.5-3 billion to build it. You know, a team without that franchise right now, there's just not many of them left. So I wonder where all of that is going, and the next generation is going to be really interesting to see how and where all that will play out.
Well, let's give you a smaller example, much, much smaller. That's Eugene, Oregon. The Eugene Emeralds are an affiliate of the San Francisco Giants. Now, Major League Baseball's mandated how minor league ballparks need to be structured. So Eugene doesn't meet the standards. So they put it up to vote, because they wanted $15 to $25 million to sink into the ballpark to get it to the standard Major League Baseball wants. And Lane County voted it down by a 67-33% margin. They said, nope, let them move. They did. That's a smaller example, but that goes to your point about how people may be feeling about these things.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are two parts to a no vote there, too. I think there's, no, I'm not interested in this. I don't want this. That's a lot of money to spend. Maybe that's like four or five parts. But I also think there's a contingent that says, we're calling your bluff. You're not going to go anywhere. You can't.
Right.
You're stuck here. It's going to cost you even more to move elsewhere. So let's talk about something else. I say that because it's the Cincinnati example. This is where the Bengals are going to end up being. And I think the Bengals are the case study of that, in that it took them a lot to get a stadium built. That was not an easy situation for them. They aren't a legacy NFL franchise.
Right.
They've you know, had some nice times lately, but it's not like this is a franchise of, you know, phenomenal historic moments every year. So you don't quite have the fan base in place to really support that. And you're doing it in a town with a legacy baseball team, you know, without a basketball team. So I think Cincinnati knows you're not really going anywhere. We're going to work with what we have here. And that's happened a couple times to them. There seems to be some type of simmering political issue surrounding the funding of the stadium mm-hmm. on a yearly basis out there. I don't yep. live out there. I just happen to follow the situation. At the same time, to threaten to move, you really need to have a high-profile place, can't-miss type of opportunity for you to want to do that. And I don't think that exists for Cincinnati, and I don't think that exists anywhere for the NFL. So, yeah, I think the value of it is going to ultimately here go down. I don't think the lawsuit helps that. I don't think the concussion issue of the previous decade, you might even mm-hmm. say that the previous generation now, is going to help any of that. Mm-hmm. The next wave of people are not going to just pass, a dollar taxes on gas or whatever it is for the local area, slot machines being put a bunch of places to generate revenue to pay for stadium. Mm-hmm. They're starting to see that, you know, if you want to do that, we can talk about another issue that we more support than the team coming in here. Just because everybody now is in NFL markets has heard it. They've played through it. The people living there have spent on it. I don't know if the NFL is going to be able to get away with it the way they used to.
So you're saying Bismarck is not an option? All right.
You obviously haven't been to Bismarck.
Silly me.
Exactly.
My friend, great, happy, safe 4th. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
You guys as well. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, half hour brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com.
Game time or just fun time, doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection, imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
You want a unique way to display your brand. You need a team of seasoned experts to work with. You want to reach customers who buy. You want NIL Game Changers, a versatile consulting agency powered by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents. NIL Game Changers will help you build powerful relationships with customers through compelling stories, with student athlete influencers as your leading edge. Finally, we'll equip you with the right media to drive your success home. NILGameChangers.org, building meaningful relationships with your customers.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Hi, this is Steve Jones. Join me on Wednesday, August 7th at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club for the 33rd annual Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. Get your four-person scramble team together to support the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. There are loads of prizes, including hole-in-one, closest to the flag, longest drive, and more. Call 570-556-4191 to get registered, and then join me and Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation Wednesday, August 7th at the 33rd annual Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament.
Bringing bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this final half hour brought to you by, and I think we're going to need it to get through the half hour, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Stock up now for the 4th of July at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. It's wonderful to go from the calm and logic of Neil Coulon to now this. First of all, happy 7th anniversary to you and your beautiful wife, Lisa.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I always know that I'm going to derail everything after I follow one Neil Coulon. So it's a pleasure.
Oh, boy. And there's a lot to talk about. Your baseball team stinks. Your basketball team does crazy things. You know, really, it's a lot of fun being you.
Yeah, lately. I'm mostly concerned about the basketball team at the moment. The baseball team, yes, there are definitely some eyebrows starting to raise a little bit, but I'm going to hold off on that for now. But we'll see how things go after that. And they're kind of
played like the team that I thought
they were going to be.
You play
honestly.
Anybody good, you lose.
That was just recently. I mean, beforehand to start the year, they were beating the good teams. I mean, now it's been a little bit of a struggle, yeah. So that's why we need to see what happens here and see if that pattern continues or not. And we'll see what happens. I mean, you got Cincinnati to start the three-game set tonight, and then then you got Boston this weekend, and then Baltimore to end the All-Star break, and then Tampa, too. So, yeah, we'll see, and then I'll start the evaluation period then. But like I said before, this is the Yankee team that I expected, not the team that had been competing with the Phillies for the best record in baseball. But as far as the basketball team is concerned, so let me... I know I have said before I do rip the Paul George signing, because it is still not a great signing in my opinion, and I know I'm in the minority in this, I am still willing to give the Sixers a chance this year after I had said last week that I was done with them. And here's why. Besides the Paul George signing, I actually like what Daryl Morey has done for once, because the other pieces are pieces that this team has needed all along. Now, why didn't you think of this like 3-4 years ago? That's another topic that we've talked about before. But other than this Paul George signing, it's good to see Andre Drummond back, because he's a guy that can rebound and he can be a good guy that can help you win games for when Joel Embiid doesn't play. I mean, it's inevitable whether they do this stupid, these stupid rest days, or if he actually does get hurt. He's a much better option than what the Sixers had with Paul Reed. I'm sorry, the guy plays hard. He's a good story, but he's not going to get it done for you. I'm sorry. So I like that Andre Drummond is back. Eric Gordon is a great signing. Sure, he's up there in age. I get it, but for what he can give you, especially at the veteran minimum, that's a smart signing. I have to give Daryl Morey a lot of credit for that. So I like that too. Kelly Oubre-Brack is also a good signing, because especially now that you have all these other pieces around you, you don't have to rely on him as much to do different things on the basketball court. You can just rely on him to be a good energy guy off the bench, and I think it can be, because you don't have to rely on him as much for scoring and rebounding, I think he can help you be a better rebounding presence, and I think he can help you on the defensive end as well. And then if he gives you some offensive spark, that's great. So I think this is a better fit for Kelly Oubre to bring him back than, say, what it was last year. But having said all that, this is, as I said before, Paul George is not the way to go with the Sixers here. And let me just start by saying this. Everyone's going off about his numbers from last year. He had all career highs, even though he's getting up there in age and this and that. He's 34. Well, you know why? Because he knew this was coming. This is all too common in all sports across. I mean, I've seen it with Giancarlo Stanton, how he was putting up crazy numbers with the Marlins. The only sudden he comes over to the Yankees, and what has he done? Really, not much. This year is one of his better statistical years that he's had in pinstripes. And that's just one example. When some of these guys know that they have a chance to get a max contract like this to make $200, $300 million plus, especially if they know they're going to get it from a big market team, they get lackadaisical a little bit because they got their contract. It's just the way some guys are made. We wish it wasn't like that, and that's why guys like a Giancarlo Stanton and others that we've seen in the past, you know, Andrew Bynum, you name it, that don't do well in sports and sports fan bases like in New York or Philadelphia, because where they expect you to continue your performance, where they're just in it for the money. Once they get it, then they just ride the money and the fame that they already got at another place where the pressure wasn't as great. Now the pressure is going to be bigger than ever for Paul George. And as we've seen it before in the playoffs, I don't care what the numbers are. The numbers were a little bit better last year, but it ultimately came down to nothing because they lost to the Mavericks in the first round. This guy has barely gotten past the first and second round, just where this franchise has been. But no, it doesn't matter what Paul George does. This still comes down to the health of Joel Embiid. If he is not out there when the Sixers need him most, like it was last year, or if he's out for an extended period of time like last year, this all doesn't help the situation at all, because you still can't rely on Paul George himself. He's more of an upgrade than Tobias Harris. I get that. Anybody can see that. But if you want a guy that can put you over the top, I'm sorry. I'm not there yet. I'm just not there yet. And there's a guy out there who the Sixers could have probably put more of their eggs into the basket, both financially and with the assets that they have still, despite all these great, all these other signings that they made. They have, I think, 3 first-round picks. Use that to get the finished player from Utah, Lauri Markkanen. That's a guy who I think is the perfect fit for the Sixers, because you add him to all these other pieces that you've got around Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey. He's like that top reliable piece that you can put, a complimentary piece that you can put around those two guys. You don't necessarily need a washed-up third star like Paul George. If you get a guy like that, plus the other signings that they like, the Aaron Gorans, the Andre Drummonds, the Kelly Oubres, whatever, now you've got a team that can compete. If you can still get this guy, great, then I'll be a little bit more optimistic than I am right now. But bottom line is, it hasn't been as disastrous of a free agency period as I was anticipating from Daryl Morey, despite the signing of Paul George. And I do think the Sixers are a little bit better of a team than they were last year. Does that get them number one seed in the Eastern Conference win NBA title? Not in my opinion yet, unless Paul George somehow does continue what he did last year, which I don't see happening. But the fact of the matter is, this hasn't been quite as disastrous as I thought, so I'm willing to give the Sixers another chance here.
Todd, your thoughts?
I actually don't disagree.
What's
this might be a first.
What's
my
next?
Man.
I was going to say, it's not, I wasn't thinking Lauri Markkanen. I was thinking, like I said yesterday, I was thinking Brandon Ingram, but then I saw Brandon Ingram's missed 103 games in 3 years, and I wasn't too excited about that anymore either.
Yeah, once I saw that, that became a hard no for me pretty quickly. But yeah, if he had been healthy, then yeah, I would be with you there too. No question there. And can we also stop with trying to bring back Ben Simmons because he can be the good defensive guy? Enough. Anybody who suggests that Ben Simmons should come back to the Sixers should not be watching basketball anymore. The guy doesn't deserve to be on an NBA roster, period, let alone get a second, third chance from the Sixers. I don't care what kind of role you would give him. Please, don't waste my time or insult my intelligence with that.
We wouldn't want to do that.
I mean, you know me. I can't ignore stupid. That's the very definition of what stupidity is in sports, is to suggest that maybe you should bring back Ben Simmons. Please.
So what else is on the stupid radar?
You know what? Actually, that was about it, to be honest with you. I mean, like I said, I'm other than the Paul George signing by the Sixers, which I saw coming, and I don't live under a rock, I like what the Sixers have done so far this offseason. I mean, the other thing I will say, though, is I wasn't a big fan of the draft pick. I was I would have liked to see the next from Tennessee to be in a Sixer uniform. I just think the way the board was falling, there were a lot of good players. Now, Jared McCain, he's a good player. I'm not trying to take him down that way. I just think when you had a guy like Necht on the board at 17 or 16 rather, I think there was much better value there for a guy in McCain who, yes, he can shoot, but he's a little bit undersized, and that worries me, especially when the Sixers had the rebounding issues that they had, in particular in the Knicks series last year. They need to get bigger and stronger. And not only that, Necht can be a difference maker. I mean, he was tremendous in the tournament for Tennessee and in the SEC tournament, if I remember correctly, last year. That's a guy that not only can score and not only can shoot, but can score. It can just make, can just be that third guy that can make some really difference-making plays to complement Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid. So McCain is not a really, really bad draft pick. I just think Necht had more value at 16, the way things were falling with basically every European player going in the top 10, it looked like.
Yeah, in fact, I voted Dalton Knecht number 2 on my Wooden Award ballot behind Zach Edey. So that's how highly I thought of him.
There you go.
I thought that ended up being a great pick for the Lakers.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, the Lakers are the ones that get him, so there's that.
Well, he was there.
Sixers once again blew it.
I mean, he was there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you could have had him. Could have had Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, we did that song and dance last week. But, yeah, that's my only other issue was the McCain pick. Not that he's a bad player. It's just I think you had a guy in Dalton Knecht who was – I think a real, real difference maker, and he was just so good last year for Tennessee in the postseason.
Do you have any suggestions for Aaron Boone about Luis Gill?
That's a tough one. I had been on the case that let him go and forget about the innings thing because he was pitching so good, but I mean, now I think you are starting to see the fatigue a little bit just because I don't think he's been there. I don't know. That's a really tough call. Even I don't even have the answer to that one just yet. I guess I won't hate it either way for right now because I still think he's a good arm to have one way or the other. But that's a tough call right now. I don't even have the answer to that.
Well, you got Aaron Judge. He's still in the lineup.
Yeah, so far so good with him on the injury front. Knock on wood, we've had a couple of scares, but he's been good. Leading the majors and homers once again. Everybody else just needs to get healthy and or
Gleyber Torres.
Right. I will give this to Boone that he finally sat down Gleyber Torres, especially after he didn't hustle after the ground ball that he hit the other day. I think that was up in Toronto or something last week, but. I had to give him for that he finally benched the guy.
You'd have benched him months ago.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like I said, for a guy that can't field a ground ball to save his life or make a throw to first or second base to save his life, at least he had a bat to keep him in the lineup. And then when he doesn't have his bat, then yeah, what good is he? He should have been on the bench a long time ago.
By the way, Ken Griffey Jr., who had been the fifth highest paid Cincinnati Red, as of today, is now off the Reds' payroll. Meanwhile, it's true. They paid him $3.5 million per year. Bobby Bonilla.
Still collecting.
He got his nearly $1.2 million to do nothing. He made $400,000 more this year than Brock Purdy did last year with the 49ers.
Yep.
Right?
I saw the graphics. That's, I mean, when you look at the 49ers case, that's pretty sad, but yeah. Pretty unbelievable.
Bobby Bowe, his agent, heroic. His agent's heroic.
I'd like to bring him in for my boys when they get eligible to play.
Okay, look, I've seen the videos. Right? You're not bringing in any agents.
Give them time. They're 4-3. I got to tell you, if the basketball thing doesn't go through for Mark in particular, I think we might have baseball because both of them actually have been ripping the ball very nicely off the tee. Good form, nice contact, good line drives. We're definitely putting him in the tee ball next year. Luke's a little reluctant still, but Mark definitely wants to play. So we're going to work on that and see where that takes us. We're just focusing on, and believe it or not, I'm taking some of your advice, Steve Jones. Right now, I just wanted to focus on making good contact with the ball, and then we'll work on everything else later. Because I see the natural talent these two kids have.
That's certainly not from you.
No, it's not. You're looking at the starting left fielder of my high school varsity team my senior year, but it was a numbers game except the other way around.
You were ninth on the nine-man roster?
I am not ashamed to admit that.
Hey, don't worry. I tell everybody I hit 500 my senior year in high school. I was 2-for-4.
See? There you go. I prided myself as a small ball kind of guy. That's because, really, I had no power. That's really all I could do.
Oh, boy. As for the basketball thing, they might not be able to achieve the... You know, I have to be a certain height to get on a ride.
I guess no, that's especially going to take some time. And
a
you know what?
Time.
With Lisa's side, not with my genes, but if they get Lisa's side of the family's genes, then we're going to be in good shape because my youngest brother-in-law is 6'5", 6'6", something like that, and the rest of on both of her sides of the family have a lot of tall people. So I'm still holding out for that one.
Really? Wow, that's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing because I've seen Mark shooting, and it would be, you know, I thought a prerequisite was at least getting the ball a minimum of halfway to the hoop.
Well, we're good on his baby hoops here, but on a real hoop, like my neighbor's here, he's almost made it, and he actually did make it one time, and the rest of the time he's made it about 3/4 of the way up. We're getting there. We're just trying to get the basics and keep working on the fundamentals.
Let him have fun. Okay? Let him have fun. I can see you now. I'm not, to be honest with you, I'm surprised. Aren't you, Todd, that he hasn't already signed them up for travel teams and camps?
I don't know. 4-year-old might be a touch young yet. You might have to go to like Texas or Florida to get your that age of travel team. Or should I not give any hints? Any encouragement?
Either way, I'll take note.
Okay, I just let him have fun.
I will. Like I said, right now with the tee ball, I just want them to make good contact, and we're good to go. And no matter what kind of contact they make, I'm there to applaud them.
Oh, no, you did. No. By game three, you'll
freak out.
And then
I'll very nicely correct them with their stance or how they're holding the bat or that type of thing.
By game three, you'll freak out. All right? And Todd and I are going to be there for it. What are you doing? All right, the kid will go into the fetal position and the career's over.
Well, at least for Todd's sake, he'll have plenty of contact for the paper.
I can't wait for the 10 minutes on the radio on T-ball coaching decisions.
And I wouldn't put a lot of stock into the T-ball thing, just as long as he's not one of the kids picking a clover in the outfield.
I'll just be like everybody that everybody loves Raymond episode with the T-ball. I'm keeping score. That's right. The kid's costing us the game out there.
Oh, you know what? They always told us you can't keep score. So I'm out there one day. One of the kids comes up to me and says, Mr. Jones, we're up 24-22. Like, I said, if you say so, even though I knew the kid was right. But we're not supposed to keep score. The kids know the score.
Yeah, it's a smart kid.
The kids know the score. Right, they come. I'll go to these things that we're winning. I'm like, okay, way to go. The problem is you'll be keeping score. We're down two. It's a T-ball game.